All right. So continuing on in the first bracha. So when we last left off, we were discussing the phrase of Kone HaKol. And we had one idea that we talked about, which is the idea that Rashi says, based on the in Chumash, on the when Malki Tzedek tells that Baruch Avram Lekel Elyon Kone Shamayim Va'aretz, that Rashi says there that Kone means the creator, and we discussed the idea of that. I wanted to discuss tonight a couple of other ideas about what Kinyan means, but one main idea, which is probably if you ask your average person or your average assumption of where what Kone means, the idea of Kone of Kinyan, mm-hmm. normally so that's where we would normally assume the word comes from, being Kone or Kone something. So what exactly the idea of a Kinyan is. So exactly what the definition of a Kinyan is, conventionally we translate Kone as purchase or acquisition. You made it in. So normally we translate the idea of Kinyan of being Kone something as to purchase it or to acquire it, but really the idea of Kinyan is a much broader concept. We have Kinyan by a woman, that your Kone, the act of marriage is referred to as Ki Yikne Ish Isha, when a man is Kone a woman, and it's clearly not a matter of ownership. The Rishonim all say that Ishazu Lava Monoshal Bailahu, that the woman is not the man's property, so you're not acquiring, or you're not buying. We refer to a Kinyan Torah. When a person masters an area of Torah, he's referred to as having been Kone Torah. You didn't buy the Torah. You didn't acquire it, you didn't pay for it, whatever it is. So exactly what the idea of Kinyan is, obviously a much broader concept in the context of business, in the context of commerce. There we go. In the context of commerce, Kinyan does mean buying, but that's somewhat of a contextual application of a much broader concept. The Kinyan is really, trying to understand this, that is really the concept of the formation of a binding relationship in which both parties have obligations to each other. So in commerce, a kinyan, a purchase, gives you the right to exclusive use of the property, to use it as you want. You can use it whenever you want, and it means that it must be returned. If something is your kinyan, then if you lost it, then it has to be returned to you. You become the owner. It also makes you responsible for that item. If you own something and you leave it in the street and someone trips over it, you're responsible for the damage that your item causes. You are now responsible for taking care of, for looking after your object. In marriage, Kinyan is also the same idea, that Kinyan makes you responsible to support and take care of your wife, and she is bound to not have any other relationships. And in Torah, Kinyan is also a relation. The idea of Kinyan is the connection that the individual has to his learning, that the effect that it has on his character, and the Torah that he learns. We say that the Torah the person learns is Meganile, is that it protects him. So the Torah also, there's a relationship that you have with the Torah. You become responsible for keeping the Torah that you learn, that the Talmud may be the Lidei Maisa, that you're responsible for acting on the Torah that you learn, and the Torah that you learn is there's an idea that the Torah that you learn provides you with a certain amount of spiritual protection. So the first idea of Kinyan is it's the formation of a relationship. Further, in any Kinyan, the one who forms the relationship is the one who can break it. So in commerce, the owner can sell the object, he can be mafkir it, he can forfeit his rights to the object. In marriage, the man is the one who does the kiddushin, who gives the tambas and makes the kiddushin, and he's the one who must give the get. The man has to give the get, and the woman cannot give the get. In learning Torah, a person can forget or abandon his learning. Right? The person who forms a relationship is the one who has the ability to break it. Additionally, the obligation of the nikneh, the one with whom the relationship was formed, the one that, so to speak, was acquired, always their obligation always stems from recognizing that the koneh was the koneh, recognizing the rights, so to speak, of the one who made the kinyan. So becoming miyuchad, becoming specific, and becoming particular and dedicated to the koneh. So by commerce, by property, when you're a koneh something, your kinyan in that makes it gzela. If someone else takes it, that's gzela, without your permission, then it's gzela. By kiddushin, if a woman has another relationship, it's adultery. By Torah, if you have a kinyan on a Torah, if you are mechadesh something, so there's an obligation if someone else says over your Torah, the Chazal say that kol omer davar shelo b'shem omro, maybe churban, maybe mabul olam, anyone who says something over without quoting who it's from, brings destruction to the world. And kol omer davar b'shem omro, maybe geula olam, anyone who says something over in the name of the person who said it, brings geula, brings redemption to the world. So also there's the kinyan that you have in Torah creates an obligation of the recognition of your connection to that Torah, of it being specific to you. So how does this get back to us? So we say here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Koneh HaKol. So what does it mean with our understanding here that Hashem is Koneh HaKol, that Hashem forms a bond with creation in which he is Mashgiach, he watches over, protects, and directs creation, and we are obligated to recognize him and to dedicate ourselves to him alone, that Hashem is the Koneh, and he's Koneh HaKol, he has this relationship with everything, which is a relationship in which both sides have their role in the relationship. Hashem, as the Koneh, he is responsible for us, he watches over us, he guides all of creation, and we, as the nikneh, as the created, or as the acquired, so to speak, have the obligation to recognize Hashem as our koneh, as the master of this relationship, and to dedicate ourselves to him alone, and recognize that there's nothing else, that our dedication is solely to the koneh, is solely to Hashem, who is the koneh. Another level of kinyan, you know, one step further, is that the kinyan, in a certain sense, makes the two parties into one, or perhaps more accurately, makes one of them into an extension of the other. So in property, when it comes to commerce, when it comes to kinyan of objects, of property, so you are responsible for what your property does as if you did it. There are certain nafkaminas between niske mamo and niske adam when your property does damage, but for it to a large extent, if your property causes damage, it's as if you caused that damage. You are held responsible as if you did it. In marriage, we have the idea of ishto kegufo, that at the point at which the marriage is performed, the wife is considered as if she is a part of her husband. It has halachic ramifications when it comes to edus and it comes to other things. It has halachas that the wife is considered to be kegufo, is considered as if she's now a part of the husband. So there's that also that idea of the extension by achilas truma. So only a kohen is allowed to eat truma. But all of the kinyanim of a kohen, the kohen's wife, is allowed to eat truma, even if she herself was not born into a kohen family. The servant, the eved of a kohen, is allowed to eat truma. The animal of a kohen is allowed to eat truma. All of the kinyanim, even though a kohen is the only one who's allowed to eat truma, anything that a kohen was koneh is a certain extension of his kahuna into whatever it was or whoever it was that he was Kona, and they now become, in a certain sense, an extension of him, and they're also allowed to eat truma. We have a rule by Eved that Masha Kana Eved Kana Rabo, that a person acquires an Eved, so whatever the Eved acquires becomes the acquisition of his owner. The Eved is, in a certain sense, the extension of the owner, in that whatever he does becomes the right, becomes the property of the Adon. So yeah, you have this idea that the nikne becomes, in a certain sense, an extension of the other. So also in this relationship that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with the world, that Hashem is kone hakol, the world and all creation are a manifestation of Ratzon Hashem. We have a famous work called Parak Shira, where it goes through how everything in creation, it goes through, you know, the mountain and the land and the seas and the trees, and then the animals, goes through the animal kingdom, all of them, how there's some pasuk that the Parak Shira attributes to them or relates to them, of how they express, you know, this pasuk, what they say, so to speak, of how they express what element of Ratzon Hashem that this part of the Bria, that this part of creation expresses. But every creation manifests some facet of Ratzon Hashem, some midah that Hashem wanted to, of some midah of Hashem that he wanted to reveal in creation. And all of creation is, in that sense, an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon. We have an idea, Rashi brings this down in a few places, that the Chazal, that the Avos kept the Torah before it was given, that before that even before Matan Torah, that the Avos kept the mitzvot, so the Avos kept the Torah. So how did the Avos know the mitzvot before they were given, before there was a Matan Torah, before they were told, you know, before we had, you know, Hashem came and told us what he wanted? So how was it that the Avos, you know, forgetting, you know, obligated, why did they do it? But how did they know what to do if they were keeping the mitzvot? So how did they know, you know, to put on tefillin if they were putting on tefillin? So where did that come from? So Chazal say that the Zohar says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, that histakel ba'oraisa ubara alma, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked into the Torah and then created the world. That Hashem looked in the Torah. The Torah is the code book of Ratzon Hashem, and from that he created the world. The Torah is the blueprint from which the world was created. That work, which is the written form of Ratzon Hashem, that was what Hashem modeled the world off of. So the Avos were so spiritually in tuned that they could look at the Bria, they could look at the world, and they could deduce, they could infer and understand from looking at the world, they could see the Ratzon Hashem that it represented. When you look at a blueprint, when you look at something, you can see from that, you know, look back and see what the blueprint was. If they can look at the world and understand how it was constructed, what the spiritual concept that it was constructed on was, and from that infer what aspect of Ratzon Hashem is being represented by that element of creation. Therefore, they're able to look at the world and see Ratzon Hashem expressed in everything. Furthermore, from their own guf, from their own bodies, they could see Ratzon Hashem. And we have this idea that there are 248 positive commandments corresponding to 248, the Ramach Ivarim, the 248 limbs that a person has, and 365 negative commandments corresponding to the Shasav, the 365 Gidim, sinews that a person has, so that the Avos also, by purifying themselves, so the Avos were able to see the godly design that was represented by each part of their bodies. Like David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Yibisari Echza Eloka, that from my own flesh I can see God. Aside from the simple meaning that just through the complexity of, you know, your own biology, you can see, you know, the wisdom of the Creator, but that's literally through the by looking at their own physical structure, they could see the spiritual blueprint that was built into that. There's a question that a number of Mefarshim ask. Why is it that we say that the Avos kept all the mitzvos, and Avraham was keeping the mitzvos even before they were commanded? But we have one mitzvah that Avraham certainly did not do before he was commanded, which is Bris Milah. How do we know he didn't do it before he was commanded? Because if he had done it before he was commanded, he wouldn't have been able to do it after he was commanded. So what exactly, why did, if Avraham was able to infer all of the mitzvos, so why is it that Avraham didn't do Bris Milah before he was commanded? He knew all the mitzvos, so why was he waiting, why did he wait until he was commanded to do Bris Milah? So one explanation, simple explanation given is because you could only do it once. And if he did it before he was commanded, so then he wouldn't be able to do it again after he was commanded, and he wanted to do it as a mitzvah v'oseh, he wanted to do it with the higher level of doing it as a commandment, and therefore he waited until he was commanded. It's not exactly the most complete answer, because how did he know he was going to be commanded to do it? You know, he was never commanded to put on tefillin, so how did he know he was eventually going to be commanded to do it, such that he waited, you know, he was, how old was he, 83, 87, 87 years old when he, is that correct? No, he was 100 years old. He was 100 years old when he did, I'm mixing things up.
I thought he was 90 when he did.
He was 90 when he was a very old man when he did Bris Milah, right? He had waited quite a while. What?
Older than us.
He had waited quite a while, you know, assuming that he was going to get a tivoy, so it doesn't really fully answer the question that it's true that once he did, if he did it as an Eino Mitzvah, so then once it became a tivoy, it would be too late. It was already done. But I don't know if he had some way that he knew he was going to be commanding it. But, you know, exactly why did Avraham wait to do Bris Milah? So one explanation, we understood through what we're talking about, that the reason that the Avos knew the mitzvos, they were able to figure them out through the purification of each part of their body. They were able to see, to discern the mitzvah, the aspect of Ratzon Hashem that it represented. That body part that Bris Milah is done on is only purified by the mitzvah that it represents. Meaning that that body part, the mitzvah that's done with that body part is the mitzvah of Milah, and it's only refined through that mitzvah. So until after he's done the mitzvah, it's impossible to look at it and see what it, in its, you know, refined form, what it represents. So Avram, you know, since that limb was not purified until he did the mitzvah, so he couldn't see the mitzvah that it reflected until after the mitzvah was done, and therefore it was only through Hashem giving him the tzivoy, which was performed with that Aver, that he was able to then know what the mitzvah that is done, that is connected to that Aver was. But it's all that because all of everything else, through the purification which was done through whatever spiritual exercises Avraham did, he was able to figure everything else out. There was nothing else that had to be waited for, because the spiritual lenses that he had enabled him to see through every other part of his body what the mitzvos that were represented, what element of Ratzon Hashem was being represented through that part of his body. And in a certain sense, due to this perspective, this ability to this method of connecting to Ratzon Hashem, the Avos, in a certain sense, had a richer appreciation of the mitzvos through their observance of the Bria. We get an intellectual appreciation. We get a knowledge of the mitzvos and the ideals that they represent through the learning of them and through their performance. But the Avos had an experiential appreciation of the mitzvos. We know about the mitzvos, and therefore we perform them. The Avos performed the mitzvos, and through that they knew them. Through the experience of creation and through the experience of how the Ratzon Hashem is represented in the world, that was how they understood understood Ratzon Hashem through their experience in the world. So they had a relationship to the mitzvos through the experience that they had of living in the world. They saw and heard and tasted the ideals of the mitzvos. So it's a mashal. It's, you know, sort of like if you see a sign that says wet paint. So you understand that there's wet paint by seeing the sign, but you don't truly appreciate that fact. It's, you know, it's you touch the paint and it gets on your finger and you feel it there. So now you really experience what it means that there's wet paint on that fence. If we lived in a society, if you could imagine a society in which the weathermen were correct. So when the weatherman tells you that it's going to rain, or someone tells you that it's raining outside, so now you know it's raining. But it's anodoma, it's not the same as sitting at the window and seeing the rain dripping down the windowsill and the leaves being the experiencing it, living it, that just the knowledge that comes, there's no quantitative measure that you can really, but what's the difference? They both know it's raining, but the experience is just a deeper appreciation of the knowledge. And just another example of that idea, apologize if anybody reads the Torah Minute that I wrote about this a few weeks ago, but the Sefer HaIkrim, Yosef Albo, asks that when Moshe Rabbeinu was on top of Har Sinai, so Hashem told him, Raid Maher Kishiches Amcha Asulahem Egel Masecha, said that Hashem tells Moshe, go down because the people have made an Egel, they've made an Avodah Zarah and they're worshipping it. So when Hashem tells something to Moshe, so Moshe, you know, that's not like a probably, God, Hashem knows if God said this, that's for sure true. Right? Moshe doesn't have any doubts. Moshe goes down the mountain, sees that they're making an egel, and after seeing that they're making an egel, now he smashes the luchos. So asks Sefer HaIkrim, so why did Moshe Rabbeinu wait until he got to the bottom of the mountain and he sees it? He already knew beforehand. He knew when he was at the top of the mountain that they had made an egel. So what exactly changed when he got to the bottom and he saw that they were worshiping the egel? And says the Sefer HaIkrim, this idea that he knew 100%, Hashem told him, but it's still not the same as that knowledge that a person has by living, by experiencing it. When Moshe Rabbeinu saw that on his own, and he appreciated it, had an experiential appreciation of that knowledge, then he had the full impact of that knowledge, and then he broke the luchos. So it's that idea of that through the experience that Ratzon Hashem is something which is represented in the world, which is expressed in the world. The world is an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that it is a representation of Ratzon Hashem. And we are not on a spiritual level to be in tune to all of the spirituality that is represented in the world. But there is that. The world exists as a representation or as a manifestation of Ratzon Hashem as it plays out in a physical creation, and that's the one further stage of what it means that Hashem is Koneh HaKol, is that everything is an extension of His existence. That His existence is obviously on a totally different plane. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu's actual existence is something beyond, you know, that anything that could be qualified or quantified, but that there's a certain expression and an extension of Himself represented in creation. That's the idea of the creation being HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kinyan, that He's Koneh HaKol, that everything is an extension, a representation of that Ratzon. One other idea, one other concept of kinyan. That the idea of kinyan, we mentioned last time we learned that the idea of Rashi's idea, the idea of kinyan as a creation, on top of the idea of creating, the idea of kinyan can mean that the idea of ownership, which comes through creating something. If you create something, you are the owner of that. In halacha, if you create something, if you sew something, so you sew a shirt, you own that shirt, not because you bought it or because you did hagbah or because you did whatever it is. You own it because you made it. And that's a form of kinyan, is ownership that comes through creation. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and through creating it became the owner of the world. Now, it has to be understood, what exactly is the point of that? If someone is creates something and wants to have exclusive use of it, so they would want to, in their act of creating it, be the owner of it so that it's theirs. If someone wants to have something so that they can sell it, so that it can make money off of it, whatever it is, so also understand why I created this, and now I want my creation to be mine. This is my kinyan, that I should own it, I should have possession of it. And therefore, my creation would—I want it to my creation to be also a kinyan of it. But why would Hashem created the world and gave it to us? Hashem does not is there's no Hashem created the world for us. So why would someone want to retain ownership of something if it's being made available for public consumption? And they're not restricting access to it, and they're not planning on making any money off of it. They're not, selling it. If something is public domain, so what is the point of retaining ownership on something which is public domain? And actually, the truth is, they have a very nice, convenient analog of this in American law, that there is something called freeware, which is public domain. The license on that technology or whatever it is public domain. But it's a license, it's a contract. When you, the rule is, if you get something which is freeware, so you're allowed to use it, you're allowed to give it to other people. In some freeware licenses, you can even sell it to other people. What's the point of making it freeware? What's the point of the license if you're just basically allowing anyone to do with whatever they want? So there's kind of two in American law. There's actually two reasons why someone makes something freeware, but we'll just focus on one. But someone can make something freeware because they want credit for it. Someone could also that the other reason why you would bother copywriting something if you're not keeping it for yourself is to make sure that it isn't corrupted, that it isn't altered from what you want it to be. If you create something, now the truth is in freeware licenses, sometimes you are allowed to fiddle around with something. But if you created something and you want it to accomplish a certain goal, you want it to perform a certain task, you want it to meet a certain standard, so you will keep your rights to it, not because you want to limit anyone else's use of it, but because you want to maintain its integrity. It's like Adobe Acrobat. You're sending this document around, but it's document protection. It keeps it that no one can change your document. I had hanging on my wall in high school this advertisement for Adobe Acrobat, which had a picture of some man with a long beard coming down a mountain who was supposed to be Moshe Rabbeinu, holding three stone tablets with, the Hebrew words on them were all different words than what are on the Luchos, and then the caption said, Adobe Acrobat, because some documents you don't want tampered with, right? So that the Torah, the world, is being given over, right? The Aretz Hanasan Livnei Adam. But Hashem still is Hashem's kinyan. Hashem still maintains ownership of the world because Hashem has a mission for the world, he has a purpose for the world, and he makes sure that the world stays on that path that he has set for it, and therefore Hashem retains, not so that he can get sole use of the world, but so that he can maintain and protect the integrity of the creation that he made. Hashem becomes the owner of the world to be in that position. And Rav Hirsch actually explains that when Adam HaRishon was sent out of Gan Eden, so it says that Hashem put two kruvim with these spinning flaming swords, whatever it was, on the road to guard the path to Gan Eden. So many Mefarshim take the approach that means that Adam HaRishon may have tried to get back in, and Hashem didn't want Adam HaRishon to get back in before he was supposed to, and therefore put these kruvim here to keep him out. But Rav Hirsch says no. He says that's not what it means. That lishmor asaderach means they were protecting the path. that these Kruvim were there to make sure that there always still was a path back into Gan Eden. That the Kruvim were placed there to ensure that it never becomes impossible to get back in, that the world never gets to a point where there's a point of no return, where the world has become so corrupted that there's no hope of returning to Eden. Hashem put the Kruvim there, represents that Hashem maintains the world. He ensures and guarantees that the world will never stray so far as to be irredeemable. And those Kruvim are protecting the ability to, they're making sure that we can get back into Gan Eden when the time comes to do so. One final interpretation of Kinyan, the Vilna Gaon says that the idea of Kone is from Lashon Tikon, to fix something, to repair or to prepare something. As in, he says, the Pasuk says, Hu avicha konecha, that he is your father, your kone. And says the Gra that your father does not acquire you from others, right? He's not getting you from someone else. What does it mean that your father is your kone? So says the Gra, he's the one who prepares the way for you. He's the one who gets you set up for life. He's the one who gives you the skills that you need to be able to become what you need to become. So that's avicha konecha, that he's your father who prepares the way for you. He is misaking you. He fixes you up to make sure that you are equipped with what you need to make it through life. So this is what the Gra says. This is what it means, that Hashem is kone hakol. Hashem prepares everything that you need. He provides all the tools that you need to be successful in your personal task and mission. He prepares for you the path for parnasa, the path for livelihood, the path for performing your mission, and for everything that you need to do in life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mesakein. Hashem is Kone HaKol. He prepares everything. And Hashem takes everything into account. He prepares everything for everyone at the same time. That Hashem takes all of history in perspective at once, and that each individual should have his Nisayon, should have his personal challenge, and his Emtzayim, have his tools that he needs to perform his task, and that should all be done in the calculation that doesn't interfere with anyone else having exactly what they need, and the tests and the means that they need to perform their task in all times and all places, and that what anyone does is not going to affect someone else's ability to perform the task that they need to perform. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mesak, is Kone HaKol, that he prepares everything, he takes everything into account, and provides all the tools that everyone needs for their mission. This is perhaps one possible understanding of the statement in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says that every person should say, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, that the world was created for me. So how can every person say it? The Mishnah says everyone should say that. So how can everyone say it and it still be true? So it's exactly the point. The whole idea of saying that is that because the needs of every person are taken into account in every event in all of history, everything that happens is setting up the exact scenario that each individual needs, which means that 300 years ago, world events were shaping in such a way that when you came onto the scene, the world would be the world that it needs to be for your Nisayon that you needed, and to have the situation in life that you needed in order to face that Nisayon, and that was true for everyone, and everything is being, all of history was leading to every moment for every person to be exactly what it needs to be. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in constant control and constant guidance of ensuring that everyone is always set up with the tools that they need to perform their mission. So that's Kone HaKol. We could do Zocher Chaste Avos now. We started a few minutes late, and I don't like going overtime. So maybe we'll stop here, and we'll pick up with Zocher Chaste Avos next week. All right.
You translated that